Lord of mercy. I was fired. I was fired, even though I thought I was doing so well. And that's a story about how I almost got trampled by an elephant. But he meant so well, Andrew. There it is. There's the climax, the story of my life sometimes. But he meant so well.
Welcome to another episode of But He Meant So Well, an audio repository of infamous stories and memories of our subject and my father, Frank Passarelli. I'm your host, Little Andy, and today we are going to explore one of Frankie's lifelong passions, coaching. From the early days of youth football to the later years of starting a lacrosse program from scratch, and all the stories of getting thrown out of the dugouts and kicked off the sidelines in between. So, without further ado, here's Frankie P.
I would say that I was a very overzealous, overactive, passionate Italian coach. I could not in all, and this was my philosophy, I could not see a group of young people out there playing the sport, trying as hard as they could, going to practice every day or whatever it was, and not get fair and equitable calls by those damn zebras. Those damn zebras were all wrong half the time. And they were going to be told about it from me. Problem with that is they were all thin-skinned and they would throw me out just as easily as looking. I had to learn to temper myself, but it was still a passionate game for me, even in basketball, even in baseball. I got thrown out of baseball games. In fact, the game that you struck out those three guys in that inning, I was out in the left field stands because I got thrown out of the game. I mean, your dad was passionate and I wouldn't have had it any other way. Because I couldn't believe that I would coach a group of young people and not want them to be passionate too. So when I was passionate in coaching and in practice, I was also passionate during the games. Got me into a little bit of trouble, but I learned to temper it a little bit and be a little more respectful of the officials in the game and not be as temperamental. But I love the kids. I would go to no end to try and teach them the fundamentals of the game, how to enjoy the game, how to get the best out of it, how to understand the sport, and how much they could really get to enjoy it.
What made you want to go into coaching?
That I wanted to put something back in to the kids because I'd had a lot of good coaching while I was in sports, all the way from baseball and football. Back when I was a kid, I enjoyed the sport, and I wanted to give something back to the young people in the community. Whatever you can do that you think you can do and do better, you know, you should always avail yourself of that because people will recognize the kind of sacrifice that you make because you care about something like a sport. You care about soccer or you care about something that your son is doing or the kids in your neighborhood are doing. See, a lot of times when I went back and I started coaching, it was because they didn't have people that were actually volunteering to do this. Most of the time they pull a father off a team, you know, because they needed a warm body. It wasn't anybody with athletic experience. You know, who was able to coach and had the time. I could put in the extra time because I wasn't married. I didn't have a family. I could do a lot of this stuff that a lot of the other fathers are restricted because, you know, they're involved with their family first and their job as compared to me. I was independent and I had a little more time on my hands. And I just thought it would be a great thing to put back into the sport that I love so much. It was a little difficult for me in the beginning because I carried probably a little bit rougher edge than you really need to do with young people. But I matured over time, and I learned how to be more understanding and not as critical, you know, constantly complaining or forcing kids to do something. You know, my first group of kids that I started coaching was in the Capital Beltway League in football, and it was a U-10 group out of Bethesda for the Bethesda Boys Club. And we were in the Capital Beltway League, where we would play teams in the Capital Beltway, which would have been all around the Washington area. It was really quite a wonderful opportunity for me. I was asked to coach the team by a friend of mine who didn't have a lot of coaching experience, and he wanted me to coach the kids, and I did. And that was a lot of fun. These were U-10s, so it was a young group of guys, quite a group of kids that were really great. And it was my first year, and we were undefeated, and we won the championship for our U-10 division. So that was a nice start. Then the next one, I moved on to Annandale, the Annandale Bulldogs, which was a U13 team, since I was living in of course, Alexandria at the time, it was convenient. And Aunt Marilyn, and Marilyn was living in Annandale at the time, too, so that was fine. And I thought that was great. So I used the U13 group as my next coaching experience, and that was a good group, too. We had 120 kids come out for the team to try out, and you picked 25 of them. And if they didn't make the team, they went into the house league. We had a Capital Beltway league, which played all the other teams in the area, like Bethesda, Springfield, Alexandria, etc. And then the kids that didn't make the team went into the house league. So, for example, if one of the kids got hurt or he left the team, I could pick one of the kids from the house league to step up and become a member of the Annandale Bulldogs. We did that for three years. We won the championship each year, and winning those championships for the Annandale Bulldogs was really great. And Gregory was one of our ball boys. He was always there in every game. Now, one of the things that happened was two of the boys that were on the team, the Calabrese boys, George and Tony, went to Bishop Ireton. They were two of my better ball players in one of the championship teams, and they wanted me to come over to Ireton to coach the freshman team because they didn't have a really good coach at the freshman level, and they wanted me to come over there. So I didn't want to completely eliminate Annandale because I didn't want to leave them without a good coach until they got somebody. So I actually coached two teams at once while I was in my third year with Annandale and my first year with Ireton. And it worked out okay because Ireton's coaching, well, Ireton's requirement to coach their freshman team was at after school was over, which was at 3:30 to 5. And then the Annandale Bulldogs was from 5:30 to 7. So I was traveling back and forth between those two teams, and the games we had with the freshman team were always on a weekday, either a Thursday or a Friday, whereas all the Bulldog games were always on a Saturday. So it worked out okay. And then at the end of the seasons, I was asked to come over and coach the junior varsity team because the Calabrese boys were moving up and they wanted me to stay with the team. So I dropped the Annandale Bulldog team and I went over to Ireton and coached the JV squad. So that got me started at Ireton, a small Catholic private school in Alexandria, Virginia. And I coached the JV team and then eventually moved up and started coaching, was the offense and line coach for the varsity. And we won the state championship in the Catholic division when Tony was a senior and George was a senior. So those two kids added to the team. And in their senior year, which was 4 years later, we won the state championship in the Catholic League. That was a great opportunity to do a lot of things, you know, with the football program. And really enjoyed doing that with the kids at BI. And then in their senior year, they finished up playing football. They said they wanted to play lacrosse, and they had not got a lacrosse team there. So I went out and I got the equipment from U.S. Lacrosse Foundation, and I coached their lacrosse team in their first season. And it was really funny because we weren't allowed to use the football field at Ireton. We had to go and practice behind the 7-Eleven down on Duke Street in Alexandria. So I had to transport a lacrosse goal in the back of a pickup truck and take the school bus down, and we would practice on the field behind the 7-Eleven. It wasn't a really good season. We were 0-18 because this was our first year, and we did not have a lot of kids who understood the game. They thought it was, you know, you get this stick and you smack everybody with it, and that's the way you play the game. No, I said, that's not the way you play the game. So I continued coaching lacrosse there for a couple of years, and then I finished up with Bishop Ireton. That's when I think, well, your mom at the time was actually working with me, and she used to come to a lot of the games and scout the games with me. So that was a lot of fun. And then when we got married and we moved out to Marshall, then I stopped coaching, you know, altogether for quite a while. But in the process of when I was at Ireton, I also coached baseball for the Springfield team, which was a U15 team, and I coached for about 3 or 4 years. We were known as the New York Yankees. That was the name of our team.
Who were the coaches that you would say influenced the way that you approached the game or the way that you, maybe things that you picked up on?
Well, in high school, we had Art Jocker. Art Jocker was a former punter for the Giants. And he was a big guy, really strong looking, big square jaw, a real disciplinarian person who knew the fundamentals of the sport. And he was a task maker. You know, I had him for 2 years. Because you remember, I just came off my broken neck. I couldn't play in my freshman year, but I played in my sophomore through my senior year. And he was a great coach. All of us, you know, about the discipline that was involved with sports as far as football was concerned. He was a really good coach in preparing for us for each game. Then when I went on to college, I had a really great coach in my freshman and sophomore year in Paul Amon. To show you his background, he was with a coaching staff at Army who had the following coaches all working on the same staff. And it was Chuck Knox, who eventually became the coach with the Rams, and also Tom Landry, and he eventually became the coach of the Dallas Cowboys. And of course, the most memorable of all of them, who was at Army, was Vince Lombardi. So of all those coaches, Paul Amon, who was my coach at Wake Forest, was really an outstanding coach and a mentor, very, very smart. And I always remember complimenting me about the way I played the game, the fact that I had a different perspective into it. And he always made sure that you understood the fundamentals. So between Jocker and Amon, and also Chuck Knox, who was our line coach at Wake Forest, who eventually, as I said, went on to be the head coach at the Rams. Those three guys, I think, had the greatest influence on me. And the small times that I had with Coach Lombardi, because he wasn't involved as far as the line was concerned and everything, he was always a good taskmaster, but he was at the professional level who basically, boy, he was tough. He was really tough, but he was a good disciplinarian too, and he was good in fundamentals. So I say of the four coaches that I had, Jocker, Amon, Chuck Knox, and Lombardi, those four, I was able to meld together a pretty good understanding of what coaching was all about. An understanding to have good preparation, a good planning, a good practice plan, a good game plan. In other words, doing the things that were great. And one of the things that Coach Amon taught me was how to play checkers in regard to understanding defense and offense. He used to take out a checkerboard and put them down in relation to football positions and plays, and he would show you how to maneuver your defense to cover an offense. And vice versa.
When I was young, you coached a lot of my sports because that was one of the ways that you got involved. I remember you coaching quite a few things. Do you remember any good stories about coaching my little league baseball teams?
Well, I always would question the umpire's call on balls and strikes. That always got me thrown out. That's for sure. The things that I used to try and do to you, you didn't appreciate because you thought I was being cruel, was I would throw the baseball at you a lot of times because I wanted you to learn how to get out of the way. You were really mad at me a lot of times because I think I got you black and blue a few times.
One thing I remember about my dad coaching me in baseball was he used to take me to the batting cages. And for whatever reason, I just remember a dread coming over me when we would go to the batting cages. Can't remember exactly why, but maybe I'll let him describe it.
I think a lot of times that was one of those things where the ball was supposed to make you stand closer to the plate, so that you might get hit by the ball or get out of the way. And I would always get you the faster machine rather than the slower machine.
Yeah. And so what would happen when I didn't get out of the way and I was struck by the faster machine?
Yes. you would be black and blue if you didn't get the hell out of the way. And it was always something that you were irritated about, but you understood the principle of what I was trying to teach you. I don't think you were ever hit by a baseball when you actually played because you were smart enough to know exactly when to get out of the way.
Or terrified. Could have been terrified.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. Now it's coming back. Though he says this method of coaching is in my best interest, I'm not sure I'm convinced. However, when it comes to Coach Pass, there is no doubt in my mind that he always looked out for his players' best interest, even when it meant sacrificing his own.
one of the boys who was a freshman on my football team at Ireton, a really good kid. He was a great linebacker, a good defensive player, really, really nice kid. I liked him for a lot of the year he was with us. Well, in his sophomore year, he was living with his grandparents because his parents were no longer involved with him, and he had to live with his grandparents in Alexandria. And he decided that he was going to do something that was stupid, and he went and stuck up a 7-Eleven store. And when I found out about it, I went down to the courthouse, and I got a hold of the judge when he was ready to sentence him. And I told him that I would stand up for that young man because he was part of my athletic program going to school, you know, at Bishop Ireton, and that he could come and stay with me at my apartment, and I would be responsible for him in regard to his classwork and everything else, and him reporting to his truant officer because what he did was stupid and he admits to it, and I don't think we should penalize him for the one thing that he's done wrong in his life. The judge agreed. He stayed with me. The kid got his act straight, graduated at Ireton, and went on to go on to college, and I think he's a doctor now. So I'm really blessed with that story because I took a kid who could have gone either way, Andrew. I coached a group of young people. This was the National Track and Field Championship at Tulsa, Oklahoma. I was in the JCs. I was the president of the Annandale JCs. And the JCs in the state of Virginia wanted to participate in the National Track and Field competitions in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And we had to come together and find six kids. A boy and a girl in the age group 8 to 10, a boy and a girl in the age group 11 to 12, 11 to 13, and a boy and a girl in the age group 14 to 16 to compete in a pentathlon in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So we put the word out, I mean, the JCs in Virginia put the word out that I was going to run the program out of Annandale, and everybody who wanted to be a part of this team had to come and compete at Annandale High School for this national track and field track competition that was going to be in Tulsa, Oklahoma. That means that we were going to take six kids, chaperones and everybody, go to Tulsa and compete with, I think there was like 35 other states that competed in this competition. We had 200 and some odd kids come out, you know, stopwatch. We did the whole thing. I think the first one of the events was the 100 yard, back then it was yards, not meters. 100-yard dash, 220, 440, the mile, and the relay. Those were the five events in the pentathlon. So each of our kids would compete in their age group, and they would get so many points. You get 1,000 points in each competition, depending upon where you finished in relation to it. And we had one national champion, Michelle Donner, who was in the 8 to 10 category. She scored 5,000 points. I've got her pictures on the wall downstairs, you know, in the house here. I mean, it's just, I always remember this thing. I was just thinking about it now. Why didn't I think about saying this to you? So when I did that, Andrew, one of the other things, and I think I may have said that this was where the story came in about the Indian headdress from Tahlequah, Oklahoma, because we took a side trip when we were in Tulsa. And I remembered that I had been a sponsor through the JCs for an Indian child in the Cherokee tribe in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. So we got in the bus that we had, and we drove to Tahlequah, and that's how I got the Indian headdress. I traded my redskin hat for the Indian chief's headdress because his son was the young boy that I sponsored, and he was now 18 years old. When I had started doing it, I think he was 13. So just to give you an idea of how things transition in your life, that was totally by the happenstance of being in Tulsa, Oklahoma for the track meet and coming up with a national championship. And he and I, the chief and I didn't understand him because his son was translating. He kept pointing to my redskin hat And I said, okay, so I gave him the hat. He takes off his headdress. He gives me the freaking headdress. I go, you're kidding me. This, the value is like ridiculous. His son said, don't worry about it. My dad is really appreciative of what you did for me. So that's how I got that. I've been involved with lacrosse in the Culpeper area with some of the kids that I had known. And I had worked as an assistant coach. I had gotten the equipment for our team at Ireton from the U.S. Lacrosse Foundation back when we were having lacrosse at Ireton. So I did the same thing by approaching the athletic director at Epiphany Catholic. And I asked him if I could have a lacrosse team for the boys and girls at Epiphany Catholic, and I would coach the boys and girls team. So he said, yeah, you could do that if you get the equipment, you know, fine. The fields are there. So I went out and I started a campaign, and I wrote away to the U.S. Lacrosse Foundation and requested the grants for the equipment. And they gave us $40,000 of lacrosse equipment for the boys and the girls to outfit 25 boys and 25 girls. So we had the equipment now. All we had to do was get some of the parents and a few other people to donate the paint for the field, the goals. We got that from some of the schools around the area who had extra equipment. So in other words, it was a concerted effort, and we started our first lacrosse season within 2 years after the school was open. And after 3 years, the girls' team did really, really well. The boys' team still had a little bit of difficulty because they hadn't quite understood how to be as aggressive, you know, in the lacrosse game. But it was still a matter of discipline and practice that they had to go through because lacrosse was so different from basketball and baseball and football and how you had to handle the stick and everything else. But now those teams are doing really well. They're growing, and I'm really proud of what I did there. And then after 3 years, I retired and let somebody else take over.
So do you have any regrets during your time as a coach?
Well, I think the thing is, if I could take it back, the number of times I was thrown out of sporting contests, I should have stopped, because that was totally not in the best interest of the game or the best interest as far as, you know, the players were concerned, and knowing that their coach is going to get thrown out because he's too passionate. I was so mad and I got thrown out.
I recall fellow teammates of mine that would always ask if my father were coming to games because they enjoyed his booming voice hurling insults at the referees on the field. That side of him was easy to see or hear. But if you looked closer, there was a side that was caring in a way that would make you better if you listened, that was encouraging no matter what the odds, and that was spirited and heartfelt. I played on a team once in which a few players never had their parents come to watch. They never really had anyone on the sidelines root for them individually. No one, that is, except my father. No matter what team I was on, he was on a first-name basis with all the players, and he encouraged them and supported them no matter what. I vividly remember a player who lost his composure during a game after a string of poor plays, and he was pulled from the game and proceeded to lose his cool on the sidelines, eventually exiting for the parking lot while the game was still underway. Unfortunately for him, his parents were not around to provide guidance or assistance, not that he would have likely been keen to hear them out anyway. After the game, I couldn't find my father anywhere. I come to find out he had pulled this young man aside and was talking with him to help cool him down in his car in the parking lot, and had been for the remainder of the game. I didn't think much of it at the time because that's just the sort of thing that Coach Pass always did. 3 years later, I played against that young man in high school, and before the game, he sought me out to ask me how my father was and if he would be there so that he could stop by and say hello. Frankie has always talked about leaving a positive legacy. I think he reflects back on his time as a coach and remembers he did something positive and worthwhile. And that feeling is shared by those young men and women that learned from a passionate, often overexcited, coach who wanted nothing more than the best for each of his players.
There's a lot of great people and young people that I've, you know, I'm still involved with and know me. Johnny Waugh, who's a quarterback at Ireton. He still is in contact with me. The Calabrese boys are still in contact with me. I've gone to various functions over the years, like Bishop Ireton would have an alumni function, and always all the kids would come up to me and Shay and say how much they enjoyed, you know, having me as their coach. And a lot of times it was something that was really heartfelt, that the things that I did, you know, I sacrificed a lot of things for me as an individual because I thought it was more important to coach and work with them.
Well, as my cousin Rob would say, good on you, Frankie. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Buddy Meant So Well.